It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 222 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a double feature, and it centers around C2E2, just held in Chicago last weekend. I recorded an interview with Warren Simons, the editor-in-chief at Valiant, which is one of those companies that I think deserves a lot more attention. They do a lot of quality product, so that was my goal, to get an update on their company, including wonderful things like A&A, The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong, the Faith miniseries, and Bloodshot Reborn Divinity. There's a lot of good things coming up from them, so I thought it was a good time to catch up with their editor-in-chief. Everything wraps up then with Richard Rivera, the creator of Stabbity Bunny, and he's back to update us on other projects he's working on, including Wild Bull and Chipper, and a coloring book, among other things. He's got a lot of good things to say, so I'm sure you're going to want to listen. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm talking now with Warren Simons, the editor-in-chief at Valiant Comics. How are you doing today, Warren?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
How's C2E2 going for you guys?
It's been going really, really well. We've had a couple of really great panels. We did the Archer and Armstrong panel yesterday. We did the Border of Valiant Universe panel as well. Rafer Roberts did a reading. We all did a reading of a Archer and Armstrong script where Rafer Roberts played Davy the Mackerel. It was pretty good. We've had a good time so far.
Why don't we talk about that book to start off with? It just came out. And it's called A plus A at this point now. Or is it, do you say A and A or A plus A?
It's A&A colon The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong.
Okay, great. And I talked to Rafer several months back. And it's got a really fun tilt to it. And I think people really enjoy the book now that it's out. What would you say to people if somebody is a brand new fan to it and doesn't understand A&A at this point?
Yeah, well, Archer and Armstrong's a story about two buddies. The first is Armstrong. He's a immortal ne'er-do-well. He really likes to drink wine and party, and he's been around for 6,000 years, and he's seen it all, and he's just sort of immune to emotion. He's seen his best friends die. He's seen everyone he's loved die, but it hasn't really frazzled him in a way that's made him a grizzled anti-hero. He just likes to drink and party, and that's kind of how he deals with it. Some might say he's in denial. And then there's Archer, and Archer is a 18-year-old kid who was raised in a creationist theme park, and he was taught to believe that Armstrong is the Antichrist, essentially. Armstrong is someone who every religion believes is the boogeyman, so to speak, and Archer is raised to kill him. They teach him that Armstrong's name is He Who Shall Not Be Named. So eventually they come face to face, they meet each other, and Archer tries to kill him. They have a little bump in the road at first to start, but they become fast friends soon after, and Archer learns from Armstrong that growing up in a sheltered home and being taught that different people may be evil, he learns that that's not really correct, and that changes his worldview. And Armstrong is sort of reinvigorated by the optimism and sweetness of this kid, who, even though he's an assassin, has a really good heart. And that begins our adventures of Archer and Armstrong. The book was created in the early 90s by Barry Windsor Smith. Barry is a comic book icon, an absolute genius, one of the finest draftsmen the medium's ever seen, well known for his runs on Weapon X and Conan and a bunch of other stuff. So he really set down this blueprint of this buddy duo, which is really infused with a lot of Monty Python. It's really a Monty Python-esque type book. So if you like Monty Python, I think you'll love this.
Now, you brought Rafer Roberts in to do the scripting on this. He's an indie creator himself. Why go to that direction and bring him in? Now, granted, he's a great writer and stuff. What did you think he would bring to the book that we would like?
I think that you summed it up pretty well right there. When I'm looking for writers, I'm looking for people who can write, as silly as that sounds. I don't really care if you have a great understanding of Valiant's continuity. You can learn that. I don't really care if you have a pedigree writing a superhero comic for years. All I want is someone who I feel is able to put words on the page and make it emotionally compelling. Rafer had been working with Justin Jordan on a bunch of five-page backups for our 25th anniversary. Justin was writing them and Rafer was drawing them. These were in Unity. They were sort of 5-page gags, just having a lot of fun with our characters. And Rafer sent me a bunch of his little indie comics, his Ashcan stuff, like Plastic Farm. And I read those and thought that the tone was really smart. One of the stories is about a person who's possessed by a demon, basically. But it's not that big a deal. The demon's just kind of a pain in the ass, and he hangs around and won't leave him alone. And it made me smile. And, you know, I asked him to pitch on Archer and Armstrong. And he turned in a pitch, and he knocked it out of the park. So we went from there.
Now, another character I want to talk about, too, is Faith. We were just talking with one lady who was walking by the booth here, and she was happy that here was this woman who could fly, who was, you know, larger than most women in comics are. And now you've got her in her own series. Is this an ongoing, or is this a mini-series? How's this working?
This is a 4-issue limited series. This is the story of Faith Hebert. And Faith was one of our key characters in the Harbinger book that we launched a couple years ago. And that book ultimately went on hiatus. And we launched a couple of different books, Imperium by Joshua Dysart, which continued the story of Toyo Harada. And it's really a wonderful book. And then we also launched the Faith Limited series. And this is written by Jody Hauser. Jody's also an upcoming voice in the medium, a really talented writer. And I asked her to pitch on it, and she just absolutely knocked it out of the park. She came up with the story. Faith is sort of really a wonderful character. She's sort of a wide-eyed optimist. She believes in the best that people have to offer. She believes that people can change, that good will triumph over evil. And in a medium which is littered with grizzled anti-heroes, it's always wonderful to see someone who's sort of really being a hero and a modern hero, but possesses that sensibility. So Jody came up with a story where Faith, who's a huge fangirl and who read comics or film and loves superhero movies and loves Joss Whedon, and realized that if Superman could be in the Justice League, but he could also have his solo adventures, or Captain America could be in the Avengers, but he could also have a solo book, so should she. So taking a page out of Superman's book, she tries to become a newspaper reporter, but that industry's hit such a rocky time right now that all she can do is find a job writing listicles. So she does that, and that's where sort of our story begins. And Jody's done a beautiful job with Faith. It's really one of my favorite reads right now. And Frances Portell is absolutely drawing the hell out of it. And we're having these framing sequences done by Marguerite Sauvage. And Marguerite's an extraordinary talent. So it's really a wonderful book.
I love that she's named Faith.
Yes.
It's the perfect name.
It's pretty apropos. Absolutely.
Now, talk a little bit about, because you're like with A&A, you're refocusing some of that and with the other characters and other books. You've got Imperium, and of course Ninjak is out and other ones like that. You're going through different things in the Valiant Library. What are you trying to accomplish in the current time? Are you trying to move to the next level as far as the storytelling goes? What are you trying to accomplish right now with Valiant, with some of these refocusing and using different characters?
You know, it's a great question. There are really two things that we're trying to accomplish. I think on one hand, you know, the universe moves in an organic way by itself to a certain extent. I know that sounds almost silly. It's a fictional universe. But when you have something like Bloodshot, which comes out of the Valiant, so the Valiant leads into Bloodshot. The events in Bloodshot impact what happens in Eternal Warrior. So all these things begin to move in a very organic direction. And you begin to see stories that develop as a result of what other writers are doing in other books. So the key really is to move with that direction, I think. At least that's how I personally view it. And try to do stuff that's organically going to come out of the stories we're telling, as opposed to trying to force a mandate in, or as opposed to trying to build a crossover that doesn't really have a place. So what we try to do is let the character development and growth, which is guided by our amazing creators and our great editors, and move in that direction. So that's one answer. And the second thing is, we're still only 4 years old. We launched in 2012. It's just 2016 is just starting. We're less than 4 years old. So when we first began, people were wondering if we could do this, if we could tell a great story with Exo Man of War, if we could tell a great story with Harbinger, if we knew what to do with Bloodshot. And, you know, everyone, with good reason, wasn't sure. And I think that now we've proved that we could do that, that we have a real love for these characters, that we're tapping into the core concepts that made these characters so great in the first place, and really trying to honor that, really trying to honor some of the great creators that came before us and the extraordinary work that they did when they launched the universe in the early 90s, whether that's Jim Shooter or Barry Windsor-Smith or David Lapham or Sean Chen, the list goes on and on and on. So, you know, we have a real love for these characters, and now that we've done that, I think that we'll still see these characters as being the spine and the backbone of our universe, but we'll begin to pepper in new books like Divinity or Faith or Punk Mambo or things that we've seen before. So it's a balance. So that's what we're trying to do. And really, lastly, just to tell the best stories on the shelves on a day-to-day basis, you know?
Well, you guys had a real important announcement that came out recently about signing a deal about movies based on the characters. How's that going to influence the comics, and are they going to interact with each other? Because some comics can be basically a proposal for a film or something like that. How are these going to work? And you know, I'm really hopeful that the movies will give your characters and stuff more attention. How's that going to all work together? Well, how are you guys going to make that stuff happen?
Well, I think obviously a movie will provide much more exposure to a character than almost anything else can. You know, you take a look at a movie, it's not just, you know, an $80 or $100 million budget, but, you know, it's a $50 million marketing campaign. It's penetrating every market. So that's what a film can do. But to answer your question, it won't change our books at all. My job is to make the best comics on a month-to-month basis and to oversee our editorial line and work with our creators. And that's my job. And no one's ever said to me, change this for a film. And no one will. That's not the way that our company operates. We have a very clear separation between the two aspects of film and comics. And listen, I'd love to see these characters in movies. I think it'll be great. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Dinesh, who's our CEO, is cooking up lots of great stuff on the West Coast side. And, you know, I'm privy to a lot of that stuff. And it's really wonderful. I think it's going to be exceptional when it comes out. Some of the names he's lining up are extraordinary. But that said, it doesn't influence our stories or our casting decisions or anything like that.
Last question. I saw up in New York Comic Con, I ran into Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent, and I asked them, I said, why are you leaving certain companies, but we won't mention, and why go to, like, to Valiant and other things like that? And the answer they gave was that they enjoyed the creative freedom that you all gave them. And I wondered if you'd like to comment on that as to far, because one of the things about storytelling is you let the storytellers tell their stories. And I just thought that's a great idea. And how does that influence your company? What, as far as like stories going, as opposed to the editors having a lot of influence, how do you balance that and keep creators like Matt and Jeff and other people interested and happy to work at Valiant?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I think editors can be invaluable to the process if they know what they're doing. I think they're key in helping on any number of fronts, whether that's recruiting talent or helping break a story or helping with the nuts and bolts of putting a book together. Basically, an editor's job is to work with the penciler, the inkler, the color, the letters, and the writer, and really make sure that every one of those disciplines is doing the best job that they can, know when they can help out, know when they can step back. So really, a large part of our success, I do believe, is how great our editors are. But that said, we're hiring our creators to create. We're hiring our writers to write. We're hiring our pencils to pencil. I want their voice to be on the page. I want them to feel empowered. I want them to take chances. I want them to know that there's a clear line of communication, open communication between everyone on the team. I don't have any patience for ego. I don't have any patience for that stuff. So as long as we're building a team environment where everyone has a, you know, mutual respect for each other and there's a clear line of communication, I think that that's really important, and I think that's why Jeff is here. I think that Jeff is one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet, just an absolute world-class talent. If you haven't read Essex County, I highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite graphic novels of the last decade. He's an enormous writer, enormous talent as a writer and a penciler. Matt Kent as well. My Management's absolutely a brilliant book. And I want to bring these guys in, and, you know, I want Matt to write Divinity, and I want to understand what his vision is for that. You know, I want Jeff to write Bloodshot. I want to understand what his vision is for that. And, you know, if we're able to move in that direction, we're placing an enormous amount of respect on the process and realizing how challenging and difficult it is to make a comic book good, and let alone the intense production deadlines that are associated with monthly comics. I think it's a good recipe for us. So we don't want to come in and kneecap our creators. You know, we want their voices on the page. And that's been, you know, a absolutely essential part of our success to date.
Okay. As far as, like, the individual characters, are there books that are coming out that we should be aware of? The things that you have in the works, you just brought out A&A, and you've got Faith coming out. Are there other books coming down the pike that we should know about?
Yeah, we have a sequel for our Divinity book coming up, which is really awesome. We're really excited about that. The entire team is back together from the first book. Matt Kent's writing it. Trevor Harrison's penciling. Ryan Wynn is inking. And David Barron, the extraordinary David Barron, is coloring. So we've got a really wonderful team back in place, along with Dave Lanfear doing the lettering. Dave's one of our unsung heroes. So I think that book, which is essentially about in the early 60s, while the U.S. is trying to get to the moon, we discover that communist Russia was trying to get to the edge of the galaxy. While they were out there, they encountered something which has changed them. The first book was about a cosmonaut named Abram Adams, a black cosmonaut, and a lot of it dealt with sort of the propaganda of the communist regime as America was dealing with its race issues in the 50s and 60s and segregation. Russia heralded him, the idea that communism saw all people as equal, you know, which we now know is absolute nonsense, but that's sort of the propaganda that they were putting forth. And that was what the first book was about. Much of it was about him interacting with an alien intelligence, and also what happened as a result of that. The second story is about one of the other characters who is a cosmonaut named Mishka, which means little mouse, and we see that she's going to be a mouse that's going to roar. So we're pretty excited about that.
Well, I hope you guys keep having success and having even more success, because I think you have great characters and great storytelling, and I'm hoping that more and more people discover you.
Well, we also have our big summer event coming up this year, which is 4001, which is a glimpse into the Valiant universe in the year 4001, so we're pretty excited about that as well. But thank you. I appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man of flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Richard Rivera, creator of Stabbity Bunny, an independent comic, and got some other projects in the fire. How are you doing today?
Great, Wayne. Glad to be back.
Good. Now, why don't you give us an update? Because you've got some new books out. Why don't you talk about the new projects that you have that people can access?
All right. Well, one of the first books we have would be Wild Bull and Chipper. Basically, if you want to think of the TV show Arrested Development, but it's Arrested Development with superpowers. Another way to think of it that we use as a pitch is two Neighborhood Watch rejects become the first costumed superpowered people on the entire planet.
Mm-hmm. And how many issues of that have you put out so far?
We just have number one. It just came out, debuted at C2E2. We've got the first five issues completely planned out for our first great story arc. We've already got issue one out, obviously, and then issue two, we're underway, and we've already done the covers for the first five.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is under Think-Alike Productions?
Absolutely. It's under Think-Alike Productions. TAP is a great place to be. We're adding a lot of titles this year. It's really an exciting year for Think-Alike.
Yeah, now, I should throw in right away that I'm helping out on some of the projects, so there's a little bit that people should know that, yeah, I'm a little biased on this because I get to proofread these things, so if any commas are out of place, you can blame me. And we get to act as a sounding board sometimes. So there's all kinds of good things going on with it. Now, Wild Bull and Chipper, number one is out. Number two, do you have an idea when that's going to hit the stands?
Number two should be out at the beginning of May. That's what we're going for. It might be quicker than that. It really just depends on how quickly the team can pull it together because the issue is ready to go. I'll just tell you a little bit more about Wild Bull and Chipper. I mean, as you know, it's a really fun book. We don't want to put anybody off by saying it's a modern take on the Silver Age of comics and that fun that they had back then. Mm-hmm. But it really is. It's a lighthearted book. It does have a serious adventure running through it. But anything can happen, from a musical interlude from the Brady Bunch to a Sam and Dean reference from Supernatural. We really have a lot of fun with this book. One of the best parts of this book is the fact that Dwayne Biddix, the artist that is also part of the team on Stabbity Bunny, Dwayne Biddix loves superheroes. I love superheroes. And we really try to honor the comic book tradition while having fun with some of the concepts that you might normally encounter in comics. But we want to have a fresh take on that.
Mm-hmm. Which is really good. I know that you were interviewed for another podcast, and one guy, they found one joke really great, and he said that he fell to the floor off the chair laughing at it. So you've got a good start on it, and people seem to like it.
Well, yeah, at the convention, people pick up the book, and this one couple was laughing so much that I was really kind of shocked, but they were page after page just finding a lot of fun in it. And like I said, I think some people will find a lot of the humor to be smile humor or maybe giggle humor, not necessarily rolling across the floor. But then again, you never know. Some things strike different people as being even more funny. And I think that certainly with the range of pop culture references and the fun that we have, I think everybody can find something funny in the book.
Yeah, they've got the two very different characters of the main guys. One guy is kind of an athletic guy. I don't know if you want to say that because he's a little stocky as well.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about the two guys. Wild Bull is someone who, and I was thinking about this today, Wild Bull, of course, he's really happy. He's at the superpower jackpot. But I have to tell you, Wild Bull was just as happy before. And he kind of exists in the world and just sees it in such a positive light that, yeah, this is a great bonus. But really, he thought he had everything in the world to begin with anyway, even though basically what he did was wander the neighborhood in armor that he bought off of eBay, you know, just little padding and police armor and stuff, with his old football helmet with two bull horns, one of which is broken, taped to the top of his football helmet. And he carried his police scanner around, and he felt like he was doing some good in the neighborhood, and nobody could tell him any different. And now that he's got powers, he's just doing the same thing, only now he can help even more. And I think he's got an incredibly positive outlook on the world. But we have Wild Bull on one side, who's kind of someone who's, I don't think he's given up childhood mentally. I think Wild Bull still almost exists as a 12-year-old, if you will. And then Chipper is physically stuck at 12 years old. And he knew Bull back in the sixth grade. That'll all come out in the first issue. But Chipper, who is physically stuck at 12 years old, has really had to do a lot more maturing than Wild Bull has. So we kind of have two sides of the same coin.
We've introduced some other fun characters, too, in the comic. And I don't know if you want to talk about them or let them be a surprise when people read the book.
No, absolutely. We're proud of all of our characters. I think we got a great team. We have Major Granny, who is an 80-year-old superhero. And she's incredibly tough and very strong. And she's got the personality mix of, yes, a military commander and a grandmother. Which side of that you get really depends on how you strike her. Wild Bull gets the military commander side for sure. And Chipper, you know, reminds her of one of her grandkids. So she's, or in this case, probably one of her great grandkids. So she's very nice to him. I would say if you're going through the comic book stats and comparing powers, well, Major Granny is probably more indestructible than Superman. However, she has no weaknesses, no kryptonite, no magic, et cetera, et cetera. However, she's got the constitution of an 80-year-old. So she has her own limits built in, along with being incredibly tough. Now, we've got Pete and Repeat, the shape-shifting emo twins. And Pete's the one that was actually given the powers, and his powers work no matter what. Repeat was one; it was his twin, and he ended up being able to use the powers, but only if he's within 100 yards of Pete. And also, Pete has to have used his powers recently. And in one of the upcoming issues, they'll be having a battle. And really, Repeat is always trying to drag Pete into these things because Pete is not into it at all. He's the more serious, downright dour of the two twins. And Repeat is just a fun-loving guy who wants to get out there and help people, but also have fun doing it. So at one point during one of the upcoming battles, they're about 100 yards away from a Starbucks. So Pete says, I'm going to sit here and enjoy myself, have a latte, etc. I'll change shape every once in a while. We're about 100 yards apart. You go to it. So that's the difference between those two characters. Then we have Mesmer. And Mesmer was an illusionist slash magician. And now he has powers. He's got super improved invisibility that he can use on himself and others. Not only is he not visible through any of the light spectrum, but he also cannot be detected via smell and makes no noise as well. But he also has illusion casting powers. The limitations of those will be tested as the book goes forward.
It's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of comedy in it, a lot of humor. And, you know, it's not a funny book in the sense of the way that people derogatorily like to talk about comics, but there's a lot of fun in it.
Well, yeah, I have to tell you, you know, I've been reading comics since just about forever, and I had a lot of fun with the Silver Age, and I certainly enjoy whatever age we're in now. I know we're past modern, I think, but I certainly enjoy our comics now, and I enjoy the gritty realism, but I also enjoyed just being able to pick up an issue and just escape for a moment, love the characters that you're reading about, and have fun. This is more lighthearted. It is more upbeat. There are serious moments, certainly. And the overall storyline, the underlying thread, there's a very serious one for the entire planet. But I want to have fun getting there.
Mm-hmm. So it's a great book. How do people get a hold of Wild Bull and Chipper? It sounds like you have to go to conventions a lot of the time, but are there other ways to get it?
Well, conventions, certainly. And then we're going to be on Comixology. Mm-hmm. Just takes them a while to process files. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a site. And before that site gets up, because I do want the Wild Bull and Chipper site to be every bit as good as the Stabbity Bunny site, mm-hmm. I believe I'm going to start listing some of the Wild Bull and Chipper items on the Stabbity Bunny site, mm-hmm. just with a different link, mm-hmm. until that other site, wildbullandchipper.com, gets up and running.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So there's a lot to read in this book and a lot to enjoy and different characters. And Dwayne does a great job. And of course, Liesl, the coloring as well. Great, great, great stuff, just as well as good as Stabbity Bunny, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I think if anything, Dwayne has more freedom in this book to really express himself through his even more cartoony acting. The characters, I'd say, you know, because we have fun. I mean, at one point, from nowhere, of course, Chipper pulls out a big bullhorn to get the attention and screams through that. And then the next panel, it's gone, and we make no apologies for that. It's very cartoon-like in that way. As a matter of fact, the number of people that have reviewed the comic have already said they could picture it on Adult Swim. And we would certainly love to be there. So anytime anybody wants to start a petition, please do. Hook us into that. But yes, I would say Wild Bull and Chipper, definitely check it out. And once the site is up, our Facebook page will be up very soon as well, probably within the next couple of weeks. You can get information there, find out about some of the characters. Probably going to post some of the first pages as well.
Okay. Anything else we should know about Wild Bull and Chipper?
Yes. We're going to be having a Kickstarter, which will start on May the 4th. Just jumping on that rather famous date of May the 4th be with you. And our promos for that will feature our characters in some space opera style clothing, which I will not say resembles any particular franchise, but yes, it does. And what we'll be doing is just trying to gather some more funds so we can keep going forward with our issues. This is going to focus on issue 2. I will say all of our characters are visually unique as well as very interesting within the story. So we have done the toy turnarounds, you know, the drawings from front, side, back, etc. of the toys. And we will at some point in the not too distant future run a Kickstarter to see if people would like to see toys of these guys. We know you first got to get more familiar with the characters and see what you like about the series. But we've got some great-looking characters, and I think they would make fantastic toys.
Sounds like fun. Now, you've got other projects as well. You're doing a coloring book, which is kind of interesting, because that seems to be a popular thing right about now. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came to be?
No. Okay. Yes, of course. Yes, of course. the coloring book, the line art is by the fantastic Michael Locoduck Duran, which if anybody goes to a convention, well, just about everywhere, it seems, because Michael gets around. He's always getting his booths, and he does a great, great job in Artist Alley. We've known each other for a while, and we wanted to do something, a project together, and Michael started doing some backup stories in Stabbity Bunny. That comes up again. We'll talk about that a little bit. But basically, it is, if you're trying to just fit it into something that you already know, yes, it would be kind of Calvin and Hobbes-like. It is the imagination of a four-year-old girl in this case. And no, Stabbity Bunny does not animate, but she does dress him up. And in her imagination, he's there as a partner, but as a partner, she carries around like you would any other stuffed toy. The short stories we do with that, for the most part, you set up something fun that is familiar, and then it ends in a reality punchline where we come back from whatever adventure she's been in, we see what has really been happening and where she really was. So we've enjoyed that. We thought, well, we would put some of the pages into a coloring book, and we made sure that we got really good paper for that. And in the first half of the coloring book, you color the book. In the second half of the coloring book, we've got a story. Not only do you color it, but you put in the word balloons and decide what the story is. Now, we couldn't afford to put in stickers this time around. We're thinking about trying to get that happening. But in the meantime, we did put two pages of word balloons that wouldn't destroy any artwork. And those can either be cut out or traced and put in. And we do address it as though we were addressing a younger reader. that was kind of taking this project on. We talked to them and tell them what they can do with those and how they might attach them to the book. And there's a lot of little touches in there that acknowledges the younger creative person that the book is targeted at. I mean, of course, everybody likes to color, but you'll notice in the book, even in the credits, we leave a space for the colorist, for the person coloring the stories in this case, mm-hmm. for the person to put their name in. Mm-hmm. And even in the copyright, you know, it's copyright us, except for the really awesome coloring done by the artist listed above. Mm-hmm. There's a poster where one of the main features of that is, you know, colors by, and they can put their name in that. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, just because we really want to encourage creativity in all ages, but especially young people, we say, what will you create next? And it's got a panel from one of the stories where clearly Grace is using her imagination and hopping around in her toys and everything and having a fun time. So I do have to say that book has been very, very well received, mm-hmm. with some people buying two or three, if they had two or three children, mm-hmm. or buying them for nieces and nephews. And one person said, I'm going to be the coolest uncle ever now, and took a book away proudly. So we were very happy with that and very happy with the reaction that we're getting.
Mm-hmm. Now, how's that going to be made available? Is there going to be a website for that? How's that going to work?
That's going to be on Stabbity Bunny for sure.
Okay.
Because though it's at an earlier point in their timeline, the two characters are characters featured in Stabbity Bunny. Mm-hmm. But this is the all ages version. Of course, Stabbity Bunny being more of a horror mystery story. This is the one that you can hand to your 2 or 3 year old, mm-hmm. and have fun with it. So that'll be just one of the entries on our merchandise page, mm-hmm. stabbitybunny.com. Go to the merchandise tab, and that'll be in our little store there. You can order it that way. Really, Comixology for a coloring book probably wouldn't work unless, well, I suppose if you had a tablet with a, you know, coloring pen or something, but probably just the more practical way is to either order it through the mail or one of our shows, but it will be out there.
Mm-hmm. Does it have a title? Did you settle on a title for this book?
Well, right now we just called it a Create Your Own Comic Coloring Book.
Okay.
Because we do have the absolutely awesome adventures of Grace and Hansi coming up, but that's going to be a fully colored book. Liesl's doing a great job on that as well.
Mm,
her art, her colors with Michael's artwork, it just looks terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does look good. Further adventures coming? Is that something you're going to do on
a regular basis? Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes. Those titles will be revealed as the stories come, but yeah, Michael's already working on another story, and I've got several more, but yeah, the first two were Bat Grace, and the other one was Grace in Space, mm-hmm. and the other titles will be revealed as we go.
Okay, that sounds good. Lots of fun for that, and of course, with coloring books right now being all the rage, this is a great time to be putting that out, so that's a great thing. Other projects that you're working on, do you want to talk a little bit about those? I know you've got irons in the fire, and it just depends on whether you can talk about them or not, of course, which is true for every professional, seems like.
Well, we do have some stuff going. I will speak to them very obliquely right now, mm-hmm. but one children's book, mm-hmm. that is going to have incredible artwork, and I'm not even going to mention the creator at this time, but she is fantastic, and it's really, every time I see it, I just get more and more enthused about a project that I already love. So that hopefully will be more along the lines of November, but we're doing that artwork as we go and kind of putting the book together in kind of a non-traditional way, but as we get forward on the project, we get a little closer. Should you have me back, I can give you probably closer to a real deadline,
okay.
because we want this book to be as good as it can be, mm-hmm. and if it takes a little bit longer, if it's not ready in November, then we premiere it in the spring.
Of course, November is a perfect time to do it, though, because that's in the holiday gift-buying season.
Oh, yes. Yes,
that would be ideal.
That is part of the reason for shooting for November. We'll see. Like I said, we want the absolute best book we can do. We both love this project, mm-hmm. and if it has to wait, it has to wait, but let's hope for November.
Okay.
Cross your fingers for us.
Okay.
One other book, another series that I'm working on, is with Drew Moss.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew Moss, of course, people know him from all kinds of books, but most recently, Blood Feud. And, of course, he did Terrible Lizard, mm-hmm. and a lot of great stuff. I mean, I love Drew's art. Mm-hmm. And he is just doing a fantastic job. I've got the pages in front of me all the time. I go back and look at them, mm-hmm. the one that he's already completed for the book. Mm-hmm. We're about halfway done with that. We have not chosen a colorist at this time,
mm-hmm.
but we have a few candidates that we're kind of narrowing the field down,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be a really, really fun book.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, looking forward to that. So why don't we get back to what started it all and get back to Stabbity Bunny. Where is Stabbity Bunny at these days?
Stabbity Bunny, we have the first three issues out, and we're very pleased. The art on the book just got better and better as the art team, Dwayne Biddix and Liesl Buenaventura, meshed together. As we had more and more time to work together, mm-hmm. they became just a tremendous unit. Their artwork together is amazing. We okay. have, of course, 12 issues in the first arc. All of that has already been planned out, mm-hmm. but more than likely, issue 4 will be out towards the end of May. Mm-hmm. And really, if you haven't stopped by our site yet, stabbitybunny.com, that's 2 B's and 1 T, mm-hmm. we encourage you to do so. There's a lot of information on there. There's character sheets, there's stuff about the world, of course, the merchandise page, our upcoming appearances. There are entries for each of the creators on the book. And it's just a book that is very near and dear to the entire creative team.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't you, in case somebody hadn't listened to your previous interview, give a really brief overview as to what Stabbity Bunny is about?
Well, I guess that even if they have heard about Stabbity Bunny before, we're kind of revealing a little bit more about the book lately as we go. Mm-hmm. Stabbity Bunny focuses on Grace, who is a 7-year-old child and happens to be probably one of the sweetest of the sweet children out there. Mm-hmm. And she is going to be in a direct conflict with one of the most powerful and most evil men to be on the face of the planet. Mm-hmm. And what stands between the two of them is her 100-year-old plush bunny. Mm-hmm. So basically, one of the things that we say is a terrible war is coming and Grace is the key to victory if her plush bunny can keep her alive long enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great book. It's a lot of fun. Very creative, very different compared to other books. Of course, it's a, you call it a mystery horror, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it's a mystery horror. There's mysteries at various levels. I mean, the fictional town of Holiday, Vermont. How do you have a place that's so perfect? Mm-hmm. There hasn't been much in the way of any kind of crime. Certainly no murder in the last 150 years. You can leave the keys in your car, go on a European vacation, come back, and the worst thing that could have happened is that your neighbor trims your hedges for you and puts your mail inside unasked. And then we've got Glyph, who is a really bad, bad man, to put it simply. But he's been around for quite some time, and he has been traveling the world learning about magic, and he's turned the darkness in his soul into tattoo ink that crawls continuously up and down his arms and shoulders and neck, which he can direct by drawing on his own body. He can draw designs, and the tattoo ink stays in those designs for as long as he needs it for various magical effects. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as the lunch lady, Mrs. Pizza, found out, mm-hmm. he can also gather it into his hand and paralyze someone and tattoo them very painfully, for various effects, whether it be incorporating them unknowingly into his network of spies. That's the most benevolent of the effects that he can generate with that.
So she's got a challenge in front of her.
Absolutely.
Very good. It's all good materials and all good books. Do you know what the next con appearances are, when the people might be able to come and pick up copies?
Well, we've got a few coming up, and they all escape me right now.
We can check the website and get that kind of information, because we've got a lot of that up at stabbitybunny.com. So people, if they want to, can check there and get there, and also on Facebook. So there's a lot of ways to keep up with all these good books that you're coming up with.
Well, we really appreciate that. And, of course, we're always happy when somebody reads one of our books and finds enjoyment in one of our series. As we pick the pace up a little bit, our teams are getting, I think, more adept at working together, and the deadlines that we put out there, we always strive to make those. That's why sometimes I'm a little cagey on exactly when something's coming out. If I'm a little cagey because we're not sure, I give you a deadline, we're going to try to make it. And so far, we've succeeded.
Well, they're all great materials, and I highly encourage people to check them out. And be sure to stop by, because Richard likes to sign the comics for folks, too, and likes to talk with people and get feedback, too. So, Richard, good talking with you, and lots of good materials. And we look forward to more that are on the way.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne, and I really appreciate the chance to be here. And I'll be listening to your podcasts, as I always do.
Thank you. And that's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.